This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, Halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Leander Unati Lewis Nyao, but everybody calls me Unati!
Yeah, and...
Jeremy Cobb, but Francis Bearer says, here's an obscure reference, in the Midlands, a cob is a bap sandwich, so I'ma throw Jezza Sarney your way, as they're northern.
Oh,
so there,
man,
you go, Jezza Sarney.
Jezza Sarney.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe? Woof.
This makes them even more black.
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now. We were chatting before about this, but how hilarious that there are so many versions of the phrase sandwich, like in the UK.
It's ridiculous.
Bap, sandwich. Jade calls things a bomb cake.
I mean, that's just misleading.
Is that B-A-M cake? Like bomb?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, or is it B-A-L-M?
B-A-L-M? Like balm?
B-A-L? B-A-L-M? B-A-L-M?
Balm?
Black. Always lives matter.
Matter?
Black American lives matter?
Black American lives matter. There we go. Up in the north, big fans of black
Armenian
black
lives matter. That's specifically what it stands for.
Yeah. Black Algerian lives.
Yeah. I feel
like there's way more black Algerian and American lives than there are black Armenian lives. That's
but
why
that
we need to specify.
That does not mean that they don't matter, though, Jeremy.
No, but I think it's we need to specify the black Armenian lives.
Sure.
And the black Azerbaijanian lives. Some of those we just need to, you know, it's enough of a minority that we just need to remind people they most likely exist.
Most likely. Yeah. Most likely they are. They are. They do exist. And they're out there. I was going to just, I wanted to mention, because we haven't recorded a one with all three of us for a minute now, and it's so nice to be back together. And I wanted to congratulate you on arguably the most successful episode of Three Black Halflings of all time, with the food episode, because everyone loved the food episode. So.
Are you saying in terms of fan response or in terms of downloads? Have we beaten the pilot?
I don't think it's not the most successful in terms of downloads, but like I think in like per fan, like, you know, fan response per like download or whatever, the ratio is up on the food episode. The amount of people that were like, I'm so hungry. Jade, in fact, messaged me and said, can you please tell Jeremy and Unati that I hate them because I'm supposed to be on a diet and now I'm so hungry.
Ooh. Unati, there needs to be a spinoff. There needs to be a...
Oh my god, okay. We'll find the time.
We'll just stop recording main series episodes.
No.
And we'll just do you and me one-on-one talking about food and different ways of like implementing food in games.
Yes.
No, well, we need Jasper.
I think legitimately we should do another, like a follow-up episode, because I want to be involved in the food chat.
Yes.
Food chat sounds fun. Do you know what I was... Oh,
if
do you know,
Jasper's
I've just
involved,
had...
I walk.
That's fine. I accept.
I quit. Only specifically in that episode.
If you could just come back for the recording of the stuff you're DMing, though, because like I don't want to have to take over that as well.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's entirely, you got to have to bring in a Bria.
Okay.
Honestly, I mean, at this point, I'm sure she can fucking juggle it.
Yeah. There's nothing that Abria can't juggle.
She has a time turner, clearly.
Genuinely, she may do. Yeah. I just had a really cool idea, though, which is, and I'm slightly stealing this from the Friendship Onion, but I really like the idea that we should do some, like, we should find a way, send us all the same foods and try some, like, foods and stuff, and then we could talk about some recipes. I feel like that'd be hella fun. And any excuse I have to just sit and eat food, like, I'm so down for that. You know what
I mean? It's good. There'll be food, there'll be seasoning, there'll be spices,
maybe it can be like if we're in the same place, like a once per year or something.
I can make like a full on, like, halfling feast.
I think that's what we'll have to do for sure. We'll have to, like, have Unati cook up some... We missed a trick. Unati, when we did the first episode of The Cup of the Caterpillar and you guys come up to visit us in Manchester, the meal that Unati prepared, this chicken... I feel like I've spoken about this before on the show, but my God, it was so succulent.
Yes, you've got to fill it with...
It was so juicy.
You have to make sure that you're putting butter, cream cheese, and feta cheese, and thyme, and garlic, salt, and pepper on the inside so that it cooks into itself and just softens.
It was just marinades. Unbelievable. Unbelievably good. It was very, very good. That was a very fun night. We had a fun night of tales and
all that tale.
One day.
I'm going to go ahead and say, even surpassing the Nat 20 teaspoon story, I think the best tale that we have told at a table.
Yeah, but sadly, it is not a tale that we could ever actually repeat.
This is just a tribute. We can't talk about that on it.
It's like you said. I think that, like, there is versions. I think there are versions of the future in which, like, it becomes like a bit of a culty fan thing. That when you meet Jeremy at like a con or something, like if you like ply him with food and, like, you know, you go out for like a meal. We go out for a meal with some fans or something. That maybe we, you know, people hear the tale, but we never repeat. Like, you're not allowed to talk about the tale. You know what I mean?
No.
First rule of Tale Club: don't talk about
the tale.
To give
you an impression, I won't give any specifics of the story. Just know that it takes place, I think, one, two, three, four. I think four different countries. There are multiple international laws broken.
Yep.
There is, like, felonies.
Yeah.
There.
And Jeremy is at the absolute center of this story.
Karl Marx makes a cameo.
Yeah.
That's not a joke.
No. It's the most glorious story in which myself, Unati, and Jade spent a lot of time going, Jeremy, why?
Why?
Karl Marx, hedgehogs are involved briefly.
Oh, man.
I have never I laughed so much. Like,
I was absolutely... I don't think I've seen Jade laugh so much as well. She was absolutely losing her mind at this story. The jumper.
Oh, so sad. It's so sad.
Oh, dear.
It is such a dramatic story. Like, it literally, really there's romance. Like,
it really, it's a film. It's like a Danny Boyle film.
There's
it
like
really
violence.
Is.
There's intrigue.
The twists, the turns, the ups, the downs.
Just when you think that it has come to a spot where it's this is fine.
Another thing happens. Danny Boyle, if you're listening to this, hit us up. We'll talk about optioning this this movie.
But it would frankly be unethical to actually tell it on air.
Absolutely. We won't be telling on Three Black Halflings, but we will be asking Danny Boyle to make a movie of it starring Jeremy. I'm okay
myself.
Not being in the movie. I don't want to play the other titular role. So
that's absolutely fine.
I'm all good. I'll just laugh. It's all good.
It's so good to be back, guys.
This is so nice
to be back.
I've missed this.
We're back in full force with all the shenanigans. We should probably get into the episode right?
Yeah.
We should probably talk about. It's a big topic indeed. So we're gonna go a little bit old school TBH today. That is right. We are going to be taking a look at the Drow, a very problematic race, shall we say, something that has been at the cornerstone, I think, of the kind of cultural change that has happened throughout D&D, and the drow is usually the kind of, I think, the first example that people tend to give when talking about where the culture of D&D may need some improvements and some reworking, shall we say. I think that we were having a little chat earlier and Jerry was saying, it's very blatant. You know? Yeah, I think blatant is the...
It's hard to miss.
Yes.
With the drow.
Yeah, it's just obvious, you know, it's very obvious. Yes. Very clear.
Yeah, very, very clear. And so I thought that we should start with just a little bit of background on where the drow come from, and feel free if you have more bits and bobs, you two just feel free to jump in.
Yeah.
But I was having a little look at where the term drow comes from, by the looks of it, the sort of origin of the term is from Norse cosmology.
Cool.
There is a word that I will not attempt to pronounce because it's complicated and I will only butcher it. But there is a word in Norse mythology which refers to black elves and that favorite word that we've discussed previously, swarthy elves.
Swarthy.
Swarthy. Is that how you pronounce it? Swarthy?
Swarthy. Because it's S-W-A-R-T-H-Y.
Which you may remember, similar words and language used when we were discussing the orcs back when we were talking with James Menes-Hodes.
I think the concept may have come from Norse mythology, but the word comes from a Scottish dialect.
Yes. Which,
which is an alternative form of trow, which is a cognate with troll.
Troll. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So I think that it's interesting because, very specifically, first of all, we have the phrase is black elves. A lot of the earlier iterations, it's either dark or black elves. I think this is probably the first interesting kind of talking point, just the fact that it's very blatantly referred to as black elves. I think
whether it means like black in terms of like a person's, like a real life person's skin color, or whether it actually means like black. Because like looking at the Svartalfar.
There we go. Thank you for trying
probably
to pronounce
completely
it.
Wrong.
Yeah, I wouldn't even attempt it.
They're also called Myrkalfar, which is cool. Dark elves, dusky elves, murky elves.
Murky elves.
When you get to dusky and murky, that kind of stops sounding like a black person to me. So I don't know.
I mean, I suppose that outside of what like the sources might imply in terms of like the cosmology and that kind of thing and the etymology of the word of the language, like in a context in what, like 1970, it like extra textually in 1970, if you're going to say black elf, societally, there are going to come some connotations. And I think that that's sometimes where people sort of forget that responsibility is that, your source might kind of be a bit cool. Yeah. Mm. And that's fine. But you also need to consider the world in which you are pumping the media out into and what those readings are going to be.
Yeah, I will say that I think that's a very valid point in that you have to consider the context of which the phrase black elves was then being thrown about. You know, I think that in 1970 had some very strong connotations. We've gotten to a point now where I think, you know, we can use the words black and white in a more moral context, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that whereas then
No, it definitely was used that way then as well. Because like Tolkien had existed in the 40s, and those books were still popular in the 70s. That was when they were doing movie adaptations, and frequently they refer to dark and black as in a moral sense. That is historically, in fact, it's been used in a moral sense for longer than it's ever been used in a racial sense.
No, yeah, for sure.
So I think it's, I would say this, I would disagree that it is inherently a reference to a skin color in the context of the 70s. It could be, but if you look at, Gygax was claiming to have taken it from various fantastical sources, like books about fantasy. And if you're looking at books about fantasy talking about black elves or dark elves, I would argue that it is less cut and dry from that, that they're making a racial commentary. Because especially if you look at the way they're coded, I think if they were explicitly meant to be inspired by black people in that context, there would have been some kind of a stereotype associated with black people built
for
into
sure.
them from the get-go, yeah. where there
sure.
really wasn't. But I think the problem is that it was always kind of where the crux of the issue is, because I don't think there's a problem with having a bunch of black-skinned elves running around. The real issue of it is where people start to really get uncomfortable, I think, is the fact that they're all evil. In an American context specifically, the black skin, especially if it's like pitch black, has weird blackface connotations, which even though the rest of the features aren't really associated with that, like you don't have the big red lips, there's not the emphasis on the big eyes, the hair is actually white and straight.
Yeah, even the nose as well, like there's a very pointed...
Exactly. They don't dress like they're in a minstrel show, nor do they behave that way. But it's a weird, I think it's just a messy area, and it would be way less messy if they were not a bunch of evil people running around.
Yes.
No, for sure. And I guess like the point that I was kind of driving at earlier was that like, obviously we're looking at this in retrospect, right? Like, and things have shifted in our general like, consciousness as a society, like the global sort of consciousness around issues like race or whatever, that is an ongoing phenomenon that is shifting and developing over time. And who knows where it'll be in 10, 15 years or even 2 years. But in retrospect, kind of taking a look at it, the point that I was trying to make is that you put something out into the greater world that will have some connotations depending on how it is utilized by the end user. And of course, as the publisher, you are not responsible for that to a certain degree, but that's why we're in the mess we're in.
Yeah, like, I fully agree with that.
We're in the mess we're in.
Yeah, there's no way to avoid those interpretations. And those interpretations did happen. If you look at if you look at some of the art for the drow early on, people did interpret them as just black people who were elves.
And who were inherently evil I don't think they're, especially in these early iterations, there is absolutely no leeway in this. There is no suggestion that they aren't. Do you know what I mean? That is exactly what they are, which I think is, it definitely drives at the heart of the issue. And I think that kind of to move the conversation on a little bit, which is just that I think that is something that we've discussed many, many times on the show, which is that there is not an issue with having large groups of very evil, maniacal people. The issue we run into is when you make an entire race, the coding of the race is that they are evil, that there is, because I think that it does not allow for any nuance within that like species or race, and also just doesn't really apply to any real example that we have. Like, even in the animal kingdom, the most like vindictive animals or species of animals aren't inherently evil. They are surviving, or it's just the way that they are physically made up. They're not, you know, they would never see themselves as that. They are not inherently evil. They don't go out to do evil acts.
And so I think
that's where there's no precedent for there being an evil race other than coming out of a slightly racist notion, which is that there are, you know, as we previously discussed, these kind of barbaric or militaristic races, that there are, you know, races that are more lean towards or have a affiliation with violence, you know?
That is
the only precedent for evil races is out of racist tropes.
And I guess like my biggest bone of contention is that then at the point of the table, right, and bringing in different people, I come to a table, I go, oh cool, there's something that's described as having dark skin, all right, I'm okay with the black skin, I'm okay with the, like, you know, the long white hair, that's kind of cool. Oh, and I'm evil. Like, you know what I mean?
Even if you choose not to play them as evil, everyone in the world will treat you as evil. Without you having to do anything. And I think that's also where we run into a huge issue, that's where I feel like it becomes more analogous. Is that the right word? Is that the right? I don't even know. I might have just made that word up. I have no idea.
Analogous is a word. It just depends on what you're about to say.
I think basically it becomes more of an issue issue for me when then using, we have the term black thrown in there, because what it is then we're saying, oh, you are a group of people who, no matter the context of what you're doing and who you are, you will be judged in a certain way, and usually to the detriment, your own detriment. Like, people will make assumptions to the detriment of you and your people.
And I just want to play a game. I'm already dealing with that outside, man. Yeah.
That's it. That is it, though.
I think that's where we really run into the root of the issue, is that this game was made by people with some real cultural blind spots. Like, that's basically
huge.
And it's still often played by people with cultural blind spots. I'm sure that there are minority people who enjoy the way that the drow are depicted and who don't have an issue with this. But I think by and large, you're going to see most minority people saying, yeah, I don't know how I feel about this whole, like, everybody assumes that you're bad and you're an outcast everywhere you go. And, like, now, if you are a person, like, who is not part of such a group, which, I mean, stereotypically, at least, D&D was the home of white men, like, straight cis white men, stereotypically, historically speaking, even though obviously it wasn't 100% that case, but, you know, it's certainly the people making it tended to be. Mm-hmm. And I think that was, the idea of like, oh, yeah, you are the outcast everywhere. I think from their point of view, it's like, yeah, edgy, dark. Where for a lot of people, it's like, sad life.
Sad lives. And I think it
comes out of racism.
It comes out of the experience.
Marvin Gaye, what's going on?
But it comes out of that experience, though, right? Like, it totally comes...
I'm thinking of Inner City Blues makes me want to holler. It's like the theme song for the drow. Like, as we're sinking, like, the camera's sinking below the ground. And it's like, sinking down. As it's, like, starting to go through.
And you see, like, you see a group of, like, six drow walking down the street, all, like, clicking in time, just, like, you know.
It's just, like, a fully 1970s... New York. Like,
they've all got flare trousers and stuff on. Yeah. Like,
they have big white afros.
You know, this is actually kind of fucking baller.
I'd
actually play the shit. We've now that is now a future one shot that we must make on
TV. They're not evil. It's just that they're in a really bad situation and hated by everybody. And It's just a drama now.
Yeah.
It's a really hard, it's like The Wire.
Yeah. It's just The Wire, but set in 1970s drow underground city.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Droma coming, yo. Droma coming.
Yo, is that
Avon Drisdale?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yes, yeah.
I love this so much. So much. Oh dear, but yes, but I think going back to your point though, I think that the issue of identification of the issue is that for those aforementioned groups that you just spoke of and white males is the fact that they don't have the lived experience of being judged in that way, right? So there's, I think that talking about those cultural blind spots, like it is, I think you could take it in a way where you could say, like, that's the main issue, is it's a blind spot. To your point earlier, Jeremy, about it not being coded black, in that we don't have... It's not like in the Orcs case with J.R.R. Tolkien, where he went out of his way to very specifically code these Orcs and goblins with Asian influence. I think if you were to take it at its kind of face value, at the kind of the nicest way possible, to assume that there wasn't any coded racism. I'm not saying that there wasn't. I'm just saying if you were to look at it that way,
not any intentionally.
There wasn't intentional.
Watching Jasper skirt around. That's the greatest. Continue.
No. I'm not. The thing is, I'm not saying.
You're probably safe to assume that Gary Gygax was not like.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Let's make them even more black. No,
that's
what I'm saying.
Those are the wrong kind.
kind of black. Stop.
Yeah, yeah. Stop. That's what I'm trying to say is that I don't think what I'm trying to say is I don't think that even if we take it at face value and we assume that there is no intentional sparkling racism here, you know, there still is such a huge blind spot in the way that they approached creating this material that there is still going to be there are still issues and they still need to be remedied. And I think that they're still. I think we can look at it in a way where we don't go like, oh, we blame you and you're, you know, this and that and the other. We can just be like, okay, this is something that just needs to be fixed. The issue I think I have, and I think this is a good thing to sort of move us on to potentially the next kind of section, is when we then and have done either bed into this, like knowing that this trope and this kind of problem exists, like go a little deeper into it, like because there are, we found some depictions where the drow are just straight black people.
And a lot where they're not even, they don't even have black skin.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Really early, like late 70s and early 80s depictions. It's really interesting.
Yeah, there is a very weird, a strange divide between, there are some that are just sort of like depicted as odd evil figures and characters, and then those that are very, very, you know, very black. And I think there is an early iteration in which they refer to them having, if I'm not wrong, refer to them having obsidian or charcoal-like skin.
Okay, yeah.
So
real dark black.
Which is you know, real, real yeah. Blackity, black.
Yeah. Really black beyond what almost any actual human would ever look like.
Although, to be fair, there are some, like midnight, yeah, and they're beautiful, Yazzie, but like midnight. Like, yeah.
There is a
midnight,
like genuinely
black.
Purplish, like it is like, it has like in the sun, especially, there is like, so I think it, you know, it rare for sure.
I turn purple when I tan a lot in the summer.
Mm. Yeah. There you go. That is very cool. I want to see purple cop. Jeremy. Oh man. But I do think that is an interesting idea, and I think maybe we'll throw this in here. I was going to talk about this a little bit later, but I do think, to jump forward a little bit, there is a very interesting thing that you sent us, Jeremy, which is I believe it is a wiki thread where someone's talking about the depiction of the skin color of drow throughout various things. I just think this is potentially a good time to talk about it. And I think this is a really fascinating one, which I was like okay with, but then I was like, I had a slightly weird thing in the back of my head, and I'm interested to get your opinions on it, which is basically like earlier iterations of drow, we have classically looking very evil drow with dark skin, usually a grayish tint, so again, not black per se.
Actually charcoal.
Charcoal is probably closer to the thing, and more, and purple, etc. But like very evil depictions, etc. And then we move forward into the depictions within like Tasha's, which is obviously a very recent source book, and they're trying to sort of separate themselves from this idea of like the evil drow, etc., etc. And the odd thing for me is that they all real light skin now.
Yeah. And it's very quietly done.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't heard them say there's an initiative to start depicting them that way, but it's true. The evidence they offer is like, interesting.
And I found this to be very odd because, and I, this is something I hadn't twigged at all before. So I will admit that this is something that, like, you know, within my own unconscious biases and whatever, I hadn't picked up on this before I saw this. But it kind of made me think, I was like, okay, so we're kind of going down the assumption that the artists and the Wizards of the Coast wanted to get away from this idea of evil drow. And so therefore we wanted to depict them in some, you know, doing, you know, being heroes and being, you know, and a lot of these pictures, they are, you know, they're in some more fun poses. They, you know, they have little like decals of spiders and stuff, but it's very much like, it's not like I'm an evil spider person. It's like, you know, I'm like, I have some shade to me. Do you know what I mean? I worship this thing, but there is culture and there is light and there is, you know, all these things here. But then it feels odd to me that we wouldn't still be able to embrace the dark skin. It's like, it's almost
it's the
like
blackface thing, man.
Yeah, that's what I think it is. It's like, it's almost like we've got to a point where we go like, we can't now use dark skin in any context because it's,
well, not,
you know,
that kind of dark skin.
Yes.
It's a classic case of overcorrection.
I feel like it is.
Like I said, RIP Advanced Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
That episode of Community was sacrificed because there's never an evil depiction of Chang when he is in drow face in that episode. Like, he's dressed, he's cosplaying as a drow. But the episode is pointing out the fact that it really uncomfortably resembles blackface. I think that's they looked at that and they were like, yeah, we should move away from that, and just made them lighter.
Yeah. But I just find that a little, there's like, because for me, I'm like, for me, that almost feels a bit like, well, I feel like we are in a place where I feel like we can embrace the complexities within this subject. And I feel like having dark-skinned drow being light, being the heroes, being the, you know, the center of the story and not these kind of evil, mindless slaves is potentially going to do something to it's like a bit like we were saying about like having black halflings or whatever it is. Like, it just, it goes a little way to starting to unpick, I feel like, some of the problems that may have existed beforehand.
Yeah.
Whereas moving away from it feels like if you Google drow, you're still going to have dark-skinned evil drow and now light-skinned good drow. That's my that's where my issue is.
It's like, and the thing is that, like, it's not the skin, guys. It's the content.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Like,
but the thing is, it clearly is for some people the skin.
Yeah,
like, as much as we say that we don't have a problem with it, there's a video by he's not a black person, but he's a person of color talking about how the Community episode should have been taken down. He agreed with it because even though it's drawing it, even though it's satirizing the fact that the drow uncomfortably resemble blackface, it's wrong to even depict it at all.
Fair enough.
In the episode. So I don't know, man. I this feels like a case if they can't win. Because, like, if they keep them dark skinned and they're like, we still have these weirdly black looking people running around, they're still going to get the criticism.
I mean, no, for
sure. Now they have so many actual black people in the game. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
I think the fact that
true.
They have, like, the image of a human in the player's handbook for 5th edition is a black woman. You have the Lotus Den halflings in Explorer's Guide to Wildemount, where the image is of a black halfling. There's, like, I don't know. I think it's cool. I don't have a problem with it. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you've definitely hit the nail on the head. And I think that we, for all the reasons that we have discussed already in this very episode, they are in a losing position in the sense that, like, short of throwing everything out and starting again, fact that there is so much history that is steeped in kind of confusion and, like, you know, icky kind of like, that's not right. And, you know, I think we even said something similar when we were talking about the orcs. It's like, it's kind of impossible to just straight get rid of everything without it being without it going too far the other way. Or so, like you said, it is absolutely a balancing act. I think one thing that I'd like to see in this instance is, like, just shade, you know what I mean? Like, light and shade within every race, which I think they are sort of slowly doing. I think the only is slight issue that if I had to nitpick this, because I agree to your point, if there was any unfair criticism there, I will slightly retract that, because what I will say is that it would just be nice to have some shade here. If we had, like, three light-skinned drow and then a dark, like, do you know what I mean? We just had, like, a bit, like, there was some slightly darker drow in the same way that there are some darker humans, darker, like, halflings, darker orcs, you know what I mean? Like,
I think I'm beginning to circle around to a point. I hear that statement, Jeremy, and absolutely, it's completely valid. Like, people are going to believe that, like, a complete removal of that stuff is important. So we have this issue. We have these greater societal issues, even beyond the realm of D&D. We get that.
Wait, there's societal issues with race beyond D&D?
What? Really?
Oh,
I had no idea.
Okay,
shit,
I need to hold on a second.
I understand that completely, and I understand the move towards rectifying these things and coming together to people and calling out what doesn't feel right and protecting people from things that trigger them, upset them, or depict them in a very negative light, and starting to shift the conversation for all POCs, gender representations, LGBTQ, anybody who's marginalized, right? Cool. However, This is murky waters because I don't even know how I really feel about this, but I'm going to go through down this point. However, when you start to completely obliterate the history of things and wipe it out in an effort to protect said people or to somehow retroactively punish certain creators and groups, you run into censorship politics. And ooh, here we go. This is now kind of tricky because it's a big knot, because I think you need, in order to move forward, you need to be able to have the conversation. And in this, if you're going to now make all of the drow light-skinned, now you're entering colorism territory, right? You're now in another space, right? If you don't include dark-skinned drow... Does that make sense? Am I like, do I sound crazy?
Yeah. They're a made-up race of gray people. I don't think you can say colorism. If you have the dark ones still being evil, then I'd give it to you. But if it's like, we're trying to avoid all comparisons, so we're just making them somewhat lighter, and then also they can be good now. If we're calling that colorism, guys, like, come on now.
No. I'm just saying that like the potential of reading it, I'm not calling it colorism. I'm saying the potential of reading it that way also exists. No.
True. So, I'm going to go ahead and say I think those people are wrong. I don't actually care if they think that.
You're constantly going to be in a rock and a hard place. So what I think I'm standing with both of you, but Jasper here in that, like, you need the whole spectrum for it to be okay, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to be able to have bad dark skinned people. I think
we can
all agree on that.
Yeah.
I don't think you need people who call to mind images of blackface. It's fine if you have them and they're good and people are okay with it. But, like, honestly, if you want to get rid of it, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, for sure. Like, that is a little bit tricky because, like, you do watch people at the cons and you're like, so why did you think this was a good idea to turn up?
Exactly. How would you feel if you saw somebody who was like, I want to play a black drow? So they actually have, like, black curly hair along with their, because they're like, hey, let's have diversity within the drow. Like, how would you actually feel seeing a person with all black skin, big black curly hair walking
it's
around?
It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
I think what we're identifying, this conversation that we're having right now, is it is a fucking nightmare. Like, it is a really hard thing for wizards, I think, to actually get, like, correct. You know, I think in the fact that you just said yourself there, Jeremy, like, it's a made up race of gray people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it's always been a made up race of gray people. There's never
some
been.
Some people ran with it.
You know what I mean? Some people did run with it. But, like, I think that in itself makes it very, very difficult because you're always going to run into this issue. I mean, people are still going to, we're still going to have this issue at cons and whatever else. You know, these gray people, if you be covering yourself in gray paint, like, you know, there's going to be people that probably come out looking a little dark or whatever. Like, it's going to happen. Like, it is going to happen. Like, and I think that I think what it needs to be is that there just needs to be a very honest and open conversation where in and around this and we understand the kind of nuances of everyone's argument. And I completely agree with you, Jeremy. Like, if there are people that would have issue with seeing dark-skinned drow, then I think it's good that we have that conversation and that we ask that question of, okay, like what is it that evokes the feeling of blackface within this character?
Yeah. And the answer is the black skin.
Is it? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is if we were to remove the context of the history of the drow, would there be that same connotation? Because
the
for me,
is yes.
Well, no, but
that's
anyways,
what the
like,
point the community episode makes. Shirley doesn't know D&D. She's like, she just looks at Chang and she's like, are we going to ignore this hate crime? And Pierce, also knowing nothing about D&D, literally says, I attack blackface. Like, because it looks like blackface.
Sure.
That is the problem.
But
it
then
has nothing to do with the fact that they're evil.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they're evil and they are dark-skinned race is where you get the really uncomfortable thing of people like, I don't know if I want to play this game. But in terms of just, like, the optics, it looks like blackface. There's no two ways about it. You have to, if you want to avoid that, you have to make them lighter skinned. And you know what? If they had started lighter skinned, we wouldn't be having a conversation about whether or not they should make them darker or lighter. Nobody would be saying, wait a minute, why can't we have more darker drow? Like, that's not, because they're just gray people.
I know, I know. I guess I'm just really also in the back of my mind trying to advocate for the midnight blue people of my people, you know? Like,
you know what?
The midnight
introduce
blue.
Some midnight Night Elves. How about that?
Yeah.
We just have a whole new, we just have a sub race of dark blue elves called the Midnight Elves.
Yes.
And they, I don't know, they live somewhere and do cool stuff.
Like,
that makes me happy. Now I'm happy. Thank you, Jeremy.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Yes.
We've been introduced now to we're getting three different sub races of elves of drow, and like I think this is potentially where you've illustrated the point there, Jeremy, about the fact that it will be almost impossible to get away from that trope, short of just having a bit of a do over. And I think potentially that is the solution. I think the solution is to do exactly that. Have a race of midnight elves who are all a vibrant metropolis of completely different times of people and
maybe don't live under the ground.
Yeah, they don't have to live under the ground.
Guys, they've got melanin. They can literally survive the sun.
Yeah. And also, like, there's no reason that, you know, you can't still, you know, I think that a lot of the Wild Mount depiction of drow for me was really cool. They just live in they just magically enchant the area they live in, Jorhas, or that might just be the city, to be like perpetual like nighttime, because they just like it and think it's cool and it fits their aesthetic. You know what I mean? Like, and that's legit the reason that they give. They're like, this is kind of how we like it. We have dark vision. We see good in the dark. It's a tactical advantage for us. If, you know, some other folks come and try and attack us, they probably won't be able to see as well as we can. You know, like, there's a whole host of like legit reasons why they live in darkness as opposed to just we dwell in the caves because we're evil people. we worship the spider queen. And I think that is interesting. One of these sub races is still a corrupted race of people who are like inherently are controlled or influenced by Loth. And I will be interested to see how that kind of is brought forth. You know what I mean? It feels like a bit of a... It's an interesting decision.
They basically made them into the Duergar. They're
just
the Drowergar now.
Yeah,
because you have, like, for those of you who don't know, the gray dwarves in... notice, gray. People have not complained about them.
Yes.
They were always gray.
They were always gray.
But the gray dwarves in D&D are like basically an evil race, an evil sub-race of dwarves who live beneath the ground and are big and on enslaving people. And the whole reason for that is because they delved too deep and were enslaved themselves by the Mind Flayers.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually they, I think possibly with the help of the Gith, but I don't remember, overthrew their evil Mind Flayer masters, and then they were twisted though because of all like the psychic energy and experiments and stuff, and are just a mean, nasty group of people who live beneath the ground. At least that's their culture, and they also serve an evil god called Lodigwer. I think there's, you could, I would say definitely not perfect, but you don't hear the complaints about the Duergar. Because they don't really have racial connotations.
Yep.
They're just there's some bald gray people who live beneath the earth.
Yeah.
There we go, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that's, I think though, yeah, but see, this is where I think it's interesting, because I feel like for me, a lot of the depictions of the Duergar are pretty dark in their skin tone, right? Like
some of them,
they are gray, but they are still pretty dark. And that, but for me, and that's kind of where it goes back to my other point, is like removed of the historical context, people haven't complained about it.
Yeah, well, because they were never as dark as the Drow. That's
no, they were never as dark, but still, I feel like I could easily look at them and be like, that is a similar shade to myself. Like it's not as dark as perhaps a full black person, but it could be a similar shade easily. I do think that there is still a point in
so
that.
Are you personally bothered by the Duergar?
No, that's what I'm saying. I am personally saying that I'm not, and I think that, and other people aren't, and I feel like it's helped by the fact that it doesn't have the historical context that lives.
It also doesn't look like blackface, because really the fact that it resembles a person is not the issue. It's the fact that it literally looked like a minstrel show with the Drow. The fact that they never looked like that with the Duergar is a huge part of why people never had an issue with them. Also, they're called gray dwarves and not black dwarves or dark dwarves.
Yeah, dark dwarves.
Yeah, and also I feel like, I mean, I'm sure many people did cosplay them, but when I was looking into this, it's like, guys, how many of you had to turn up to the cons dressed in blackface as a Drow? Like, there's just so many images. Yeah. Like, so many like, images of white people.
You can't see my lips, and I feel like for real characters, they would have, like, distinguished lips. So, like, putting on red lipstick,
I'm imagining. There's just so many. It's just like, I think that's why I mean, like, people then ran with it. Yeah. People then ran with it, and because there was this defense, because, like, it's in the books, it's canon. Now, even at a con, as a black person, if you bring it up, people are going to be like, oh, you're just like, why you got to bring race into everything, dude? Like, that would be the conversation, and I think that's where it gets unsafe. It's like, people just couldn't leave it alone. Like, don't do it.
Should we mention R.A. Salvatore as well? Because that's one major thing that we haven't mentioned.
Yes, I was going to say, why don't you... I know that the Drizzt was something that you...
Yeah,
that you
Drizzt D'Urden. For those of you who, like us, got into D&D a lot more recently, I think the Drizzt novels started coming out in the early 90s and, like, were huge. Mm. Like, I remember hearing about this character.
Yeah.
He's so huge that they have him now in, like, they're bringing him back in, like, a game or something, voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch.
Dark Alliance is voiced by. And it's the summer of Drizzt is like a thing. It's like a whole thing where they just talk about Drizzt and they release loads of Drizzt content and stuff like this.
Possibly
like every
the
summer.
Most popular single character in D&D history,
from what I can tell. Him, Strahd, and... I don't know. They're probably Stim and Strahd, to be honest.
Yeah, Pumat Sol for the Critical Role fans. I guess.
Pumat Drizzt and Strahd. Sorry, that's a really fun table. I wanna do like a D&D, you know, like an actors round table. I want a D&D version where it's Drizzt, Strahd, and Pumat Sol.
And several versions of Pumat.
Several versions of Pumat. Prime. Oh, yes. Funny. Very funny.
Basically, Drizzt D'Urden was a good Drow. I hope I'm pronouncing the name right. But yeah, he was a good Drow in the 90s. He had, I think, dual blades. He had like a panther who went around with him.
I'm loving the aesthetic.
Yeah, he was. You can see pictures of him actually, Unati, in the thread that Jasper mentioned. He's a cool looking dude.
Hey, very cool. Very cool.
And yeah, that was there. It was like, he's the good Drow and all the rest of his kinfolk are evil, but he decided to go the good way. Mm. And like, it's him and his adventuring party made up of like people from other races going around and, you know, saving the world and blah, blah, blah. It's basically from what I can tell, those novels are a D&D campaign, but from the perspective of one specific character. And yeah, they're hugely influential. But the author, R.A. Salvatore, is actually going to be, he's basically, I'll read you, this is a Polygon article that's talking about it, and I'll just read you the opening paragraph. Despite their popularity among fans of genre fiction, Dungeons & Dragons, the legend of Drizzt novels, have been fairly criticized for reinforcing racist fantasy tropes. R.A. Salvatore, the creator of Drizzt, tells Polygon that the time has come to set things right. Salvatore's next novel, Starlight Enclave, arrives on August 3rd and will expand the franchise into new territories. At the same time, it will broaden the identity of the Drow. It's a change to the Drow that's part of a larger reckoning with race in Wizards of the Coasts, D&D, and Magic the Gathering properties. Salvatore himself says, I did it because it's the right thing to do. It's an update that was greatly needed for things that I didn't even know were a problem when I first wrote the books. And that's where we run into the issue again of people who didn't, they just had a cultural blind spot. It never occurred to them that this was not a great, not a great thing. Oh, excuse me. It started in 1988, so not in the early 90s. Let me see if I can find. Yes, the idea that that Drizzt was like othered by everyone around him was apparently always intentional, but he did not realize how Drizzt's blackness would contribute to how that othering was perceived by his audience. That last part was a quote. And I think that they're doing this in conjunction with the new Drow subraces that are being released.
I think this is a very interesting thing, and I think that this is the right way to go about it. Just a little heads up for a lot of people who have made content. Like, I really appreciate the fact that that Salvatore identified this, and I feels like he kind of has identified this as a issue for themselves. Do you know what I mean? Like, they've kind of gone, I've made my own informed decision, and I think this is what should happen. It doesn't feel like it's I'm trying to do this to tick some boxes, or I'm not trying to do this to please anyone. I think this is just this is the natural evolution, and the next step in this story should include X, Y, and Z. And I think that that is appropriate, and I think that it is good that under scrutiny there wasn't a sense of like, well, no, I'm correct and I need to, you know, and I did this thing because of it. It was just like, okay, yeah, this wasn't my intention, this is not the way I wanted my work to be perceived, but this is the way that it is perceived, and now I'm gonna see what I can do to work around that and to change that. And I think that feels you know, correct for me. That feels like the right you know,
I think that, like, but that's growth, no? That's all we're asking for. It's like, you see something, something is brought to your attention. And even like you said, Jasper, even if there was an initial, fine, you're allowed to have your initial reaction. Then sit down, process that like an adult, take in what's being said to you, realize the error, apologize for the error, and just make it right. That's simple. There it is. Done. Resolved.
And I feel like it's nice to see people embracing the fact that this is a made up thing. You know what I mean? He is the author of this novel, this creation, sorry. So therefore, like, he does have the power in which to make these changes and to focus on different things and to highlight different areas within this structure. And I think that is inherently a very positive step, you know, in the sort of highlighting of this. And I think it's interesting that we've arrived at a place where now these kinds of conversations are starting to happen, feeling like, I don't know if it's like, it's not independent of like pressure, but it's like, okay, like no one was like prescribing like what has to happen next for Drizzt as a character or whatever.
Right. They felt like screaming at R.A. Salvatore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I feel like the fact that we've now got R.A. Salvatore bringing this forward in, and I could definitely be wrong here. I could definitely be wrong, but it feels like a lot of the fans of Drizzt are belonging to a slightly older fandom of D&D who maybe don't have the same issues with D&D, and I really appreciate the fact that they are kind of the people that need to be reached. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we've discussed this before on the show, like how hopefully we're opening, you know, a few people's eyes, and we're kind of, you know, giving people some different tools and some different ways to think about stuff. But generally, if you're listening to the show, we feel like, you know, you're probably not the kind of person who's going to be like overly shocked by anything that we say, or going to take offense by anything that we say, or do you know what I mean? Like, the fact that you're choosing to engage with this show, knowing what this show is, because I feel like we're relatively blatant about what we do, you know.
Yeah, we're black. We're black.
Whereas I feel like this is good now, because I feel like we're starting to now push into areas of the community which maybe does need a little bit of a nudge in that direction. You know what I mean? Mm. That does need to be made aware that, like, hey, we're not going to ruin this thing. We're just going to introduce some new stuff. Do you know what I mean? We're not taking away your thing. We're just, you know, we're using it up, we're changing it up, we're just adding some new flavors. That's all it is. You know what I mean?
And thank you very much to the author for sharing the burden of the emotional labor. Thank you very much, Salvatore, for taking the share of the labor that has to be done so that we, the people of color, are not considered the bastions of our entire fucking race.
Yeah. Like, thank you for not B-Dave or something rewrite Dream. You know what I mean? It's good that like they're helming this, you know, change, you know, and they're not like.
You come to find out that B. Dave Walters helped create the Ghostwriter races. But I wanted to point out a couple of things. One, they actually have the cover in the Polygon article for the original Drizzt novel, The Crystal Shard.
Oh, yes. This is the one with Drizzt crouched in the front. Is that the one?
Yeah, where he's just a black guy.
Yes.
He's a black guy with like silver hair.
Not even gray.
Yeah,
he's fully just a black dude.
Which we didn't really talk about. That was one of the things that we haven't actually addressed. Mm. Was we found multiple lists, or not even lists, just like collections of drow art throughout the years, and in some of them they were just black people. You guys were talking about how you really liked the one that was clearly inspired by Tina Turner's character in Beyond Thunderdome.
I mean, Mad Max, that's just fun. That's just silly.
But in the Polygon article, they reference. Let me see here. Yes, they say one campaign module even riffs on Tina Turner's appearance in promotional posters for Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. But as public perception of these kinds of problematic exploitative stereotypes grew, public-facing images of the drow changed as well. And they quote an essay by Paul B. Sturtevant, where he says, later illustrators of D&D products, perhaps more aware of the optics, have made them a purple-black or dusky gray-black. But let's be real, they have black skin. If you can't see the problems with this, I can't help you. Then the other thing that I wanted to mention was a very interesting quote from R.A. Salvatore himself, where he says, I can't tell you how many letters I've gotten over the years from people who have said, thank you for Drizzt. I finally have someone who looks like me. Mm. On the one hand, you have that. But on the other hand, if the drow are being portrayed as evil, that's a trope that has to go away, be buried under the deepest pit, and never brought out again. I was unaware of that. I admit it. I was oblivious. This is something I hope more younger people can understand. He's 62 years old, and also white. But he says, you're seeing all this stuff, and it's obvious to you. If you grew up in the 60s and 70s, it wouldn't have been obvious. Some things are obvious, but it's the subtle things that you learn about as you continue to grow and learn. And now, finally, we're seeing it being played out there in the correct way, with people saying, this is bullshit, and I love it, and I feel like I'm growing. I just want to jump on the bandwagon and say, yeah, that seems to be a very good response, because it takes into account both the fact that clearly there have been a lot of people of color over the years who were very pro Drizzt being a black guy.
Hell yeah. I can definitely see that. Drizzt is the hero of the story. Drizzt is a, like, has that outcast, you know, and I think that for a lot of people where they've discussed the fact that him being othered was problematic, I could definitely imagine as a young black guy growing up in a very white community, you know, seeing a hero who is othered but finds his tribe, you know, finds a group
of
people
that becomes relatable.
Who aren't black.
That's why Piccolo is black. That's exactly why people think of Piccolo as black. That's why they think of Martian Manhunter as black. It's because those characters look different, stick out, and they're othered by everybody else.
And they're badass.
Yeah.
And they have all the same, you know, they have the moments, they have the same things that all the other characters do. They get the equal weighting. Yeah. They're not othered by those that respect them. You know what I mean?
As a side note, I'd just like to say one of my biggest issues, one of the main reasons I've never been able to really get into any of the DC animated shows is in part because of just the inconsistent power scaling. Even as like a 7-year-old drove me crazy. But
I can just
like,
see you so
annoyed. Batman can run through 6 thugs at once and then this next guy just takes him down. Like, what? No. Superman is unstoppable here, but like a random robot is overpowering him.
Yeah.
Okay. But also, it really annoyed me that Martian Manhunter is supposed to be this dude who's wildly powerful, but they turn him into the Wharf, where they just use him as a way to make other bad guys look stronger.
Yeah.
Like, they show up, beat up Martian Manhunter,
and then everyone else runs in and saves him.
That was really bad.
This person's
real strong. And it's like, well, come on. He's supposed to be as strong as Superman, and he's psychic, too.
It happened a lot with Silver Surfer and stuff like that. It was just like, and then if they could beat Silver Surfer, then, you know, Fantastic Four. And I'm like, no, Silver Surfer is supposed to be like some,
cosmically powered. He's literally cosmic.
He's literally the power of the universe or some shit. Like what? No.
He's strong.
He's so strong and way more strong than the Fantastic Four. They suck compared to him. Even if they combined all four powers into one person, they would still suck.
Super Skrull has the powers of all Fantastic Four. Although I'd like to throw out for the record, I think they get at this in some Fantastic Four comics. Sue Storm, actually the strongest member. I think she might actually be able to take the Silver Surfer because she can make force fields inside people.
Yeah.
They're indestructible. True. They're actually indestructible.
So, force field inside someone.
Apparently Dr. Doom fears her more than he fears Reed Richards.
Well, that's fair. I mean, it's stretchy.
Well, but he's also the smartest man alive.
Yeah,
and that can be pretty rough.
I mean, let's not get into Batman versus Superman. Anyway, I think this is a very interesting point. I love the fact that we have this white 62-year-old man very much embracing the change and very much being hey, everyone, this is okay. You know what I mean? And I think we do need more voices like that. You know, I think need more allies like that because I think that helps to bring that slightly more old school generation or even the new generation who have been taught in that kind of old school fashion who are also kind of digging their heels in. It teaches them and it shows them that like actually nothing of what they love is under threat, you know, unless it's just straight racist. Do you know what I mean? Like, unless you're just running around being, referring to the drow using, racist names or tropes or whatever it is. Like, that's the only shit we want to get rid of. Do you know what I mean? Like,
please don't go to the con painted black. Just don't.
It's not a good idea.
It's not a great idea. And I think that is where I will definitely say that the idea that we're changing the drow to be the more light skin so we can just paint gray. I think that's probably is better. This is definitely better. But I think it's a very important turning point. This feels of a lot of the D&D community, Wizards of the Coast related things. This one feels a little bit more actually embracing, not just in diversity, but like actually inclusion, like actually helping more people to enjoy the thing by acknowledging the past and by realizing, okay, we can make positive changes within this and make it overall more accessible for people. It feels a little bit more in that lane than some of the other changes, which we've discussed on the show. Like, you know, some of the other changes they've made, which are like good, they're steps, you know what I mean? In the right direction, maybe not going quite far enough. Or whereas this feels like, no, we're embracing this now. Like, we're really, like, that feels like they're really, really embracing this and not ignoring. And I guess, like, also, you know, Salvatore's not ignoring the fact that Drizzt is a black hero for some people, you know? Mm-hmm. He's not, like, shying away from that fact either. He's not going to take away that. Because that was also another potential outcome of this, right? Is that we then kind of take Drizzt out of the
that would be a shame.
Yeah, which would be a shame, right? That would be a massive shame because it's so important for a lot of people. Like, so I think that is this. So that for me feels very a very positive outcome.
Should we quickly mention what these new, because I think they're going to be in the new Drizzt novels as well as in like canonical D&D, these three new sub-races, because we started to get to them, but
let's go through them, yeah.
The Udadrow. Okay, no, the evil elves are the ones who live in Menzo Barranzen.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was trying.
Menzo Barranzen? I feel like it's Menzo Barranzen.
I would go for Menzo Barranzen.
Yeah, Menzo Barranzen.
Yeah, Barranzen. Yeah, Barranzen, yeah.
They, Menzo Barranzen.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you ask like Ian McKellen or something, or anyone from
Menzo either Barranzen!
Mordor. Still makes me laugh every time.
I'm going to say the rest of this as Ian McKellen now.
These Udadrow are clarified with additional detail revealed over the course of Salvatore's novels. They are elves who became tainted by the demon Loth's insidious teachings. And then there's the Avendrow, on the other hand, who live in the frozen north. You see, they rejected Loth, thereby remaining true to their innate integrity. Meanwhile, jungle-dwelling Lorendrow draw their wisdom from the environment, the generosity of earth, the mastery of sky, and the complex harmony of the forest.
The Lorendrow, by the way, are some of the dopest. I love the art for the Lorendrow. Like, they've got some real, they've got these weird, like, blue houses that are, like, made super out of magic, cool. And it just looks so dope. Surrounded by massive trees and stuff, and I'm like, okay. I'm involved. I will be honest, I'm much more inclined to play a drow than I am a regular elf. Because they actually, I just feel like, yeah, you've got some stuff going on that's more interesting to me than just like, I am an elf. I will live for thousands of years and I will be a paragon of art.
Sophomore year of Dimension 20, which I've mentioned it before, has my favorite all-time depiction of fancy elves.
Yeah, I have seen this clip. I've watched it because
it's unreal.
It's so funny. This is the
elf that
can't pronounce a name normally because he's just
he doesn't he can't say the word van because he just doesn't know what it is. there's another point here that's worth mentioning that this is also from the Polygon article. Salvatore said that the concept of this drow diaspora was the result of a high-level meeting that he had with Wizards of the Coast about 4 or 5 years ago, but that no changes were forced upon him. Nothing's being dictated to me, Salvatore said. I am not retrofitting or retconning the drow. I am expanding the drow.
And this is really important.
Thank you for saying it.
Yeah, that's a really important point because that is how you get that, or you get at least, you're not going to get all of them, but like how you're going to get a portion of that very entrenched part of this community on board, because if they view this as some sort of like PR exercise for Wizards of the Coast, they will reject it, right? They'll see it as like, oh, this is just political correctness. Whereas actually, if him taking onus of this change completely really does go a long way to then actually helping people and correcting people, in that space. And I think it is important.
Do we feel like Salvatore deserves a palm wine? I feel like I want to give him a palm wine.
Yeah, let's give Salvatore a palm wine.
I want to give him a palm wine. A whole lot of palm wine.
Hey, Salvatore, if you're ever in the UK, let's get some palm wine together.
Let's get some palm wine together.
Let's get some palm wine together.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if, because I'm not sure if I, obviously these are, I guess, canon to D&D, but I'm wondering if these new drow sub-races, or sub-sub-races, I guess, because drow are already a sub-races, the sub-drow, if they're going to be actually mechanically implemented at any point as like playable sub-sub-races.
Oh, yeah, I think they...
Because I know they're in the books, but I don't know that. I know they're going to be in the Legend of Drizzt books, but I don't know if they're going to be officially released in an upcoming book of like an actual D&D source book. Because he, these are basically things that he's like, I want this to be this way. This is what they're going to be like in my books. This is what I'm going to introduce. They just be like, oh yeah, we just never mentioned these people before. This is how it is now. But I'm not sure whether they're actually going to be released as sub races, or if it's just that future source books may mention them and there's no mechanical difference. It's just a flavor thing.
I hope so.
I hope so.
I definitely hope they're looking
really fun.
Yeah,
to
they
me,
look and fun, and I think that it gives you the option again of just like getting away from that sensation, right? Like, because I think, like, even just having written lore and slight changes, like, you know, because maybe they don't have dark vision if they're the Loren Drow, or do you know what I mean? Like, they could have slightly different, maybe more like nature based abilities, like more akin to other elves as opposed to, you know, because I think don't Drow get like Drow like magic, like pack magic, where
they get
cast darkness
magic,
and stuff? Like, that feels kind of wrong if you wanted to play like a Loren Drow, right? Because they definitely don't feel like they're in that ilk. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, that would feel a little strange for me if they didn't embrace that even a little bit.
And have that in
the books.
Introduce them as a kind of, I guess, yeah, an additional, because they could just have Drow be like you can have the generic Drow, or you can be one of these other, because you can be like different kinds of high elf.
There are so many like different kinds of elves. It would be wild to me that we don't get like at least literally three sub. I think the thing is as well, like sub races are definitely a direction that feels the easiest fix for a lot of any potential kind of issues or stereotypes here, because it just gives you more options for playing that particular class without the need to kind of circumvent lore or as written
stuff.
Not retconning stuff.
Out.
You can just, it's just there. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just an option.
I think leave
for you.
Generic Drow and then add three more.
That's what I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have generic Drow and then have three sub races underneath it. Like, that seems pretty.
And they're further. Or like have it as like a separate, similar to how you can play a generic high elf, or you can play like, it's like an Airini high elf, and like there's different kinds of high elf. I think if you have Drow and then the three different kinds of other Drow, I think that might be an effective way to implement.
I think this. It would be.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Beautiful. Do we have any like closing thoughts on this particular? This is good fun getting back into an old school episode. This.
Yeah.
I'd like to advocate once again for the restoration of Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Yep. One of the best episodes of Community.
It is hilarious.
Which makes it one of the best sitcom episodes you could find.
Yeah,
it is
absolutely fantastic. And
that's good.
And I think it raises a very interesting point that we need to be able to have those conversations of things that have, you know, we need to be able to acknowledge these things through satire and comedy, because it's important and it's a way that we grow and have done for millennia. Like, the idea of, you know, even shows and things, you know, teaching us about history and allowing us to access things in a safe and usually through humor and comedy, I think it's something that is generally important and part, like, at the heart of why comedy, I think, is such an important part of, you know, society, like why we love comedy, why we embrace it. Do you know what I mean? So I think that I completely agree. I think that it should be reinstated. I think that it is absolutely fucking hilarious.
Yeah, and it's actually about mental health and stuff like that. Like, it's really not even about racism.
No,
it's a really good demonstration also of how TTRPGs can actually come to. Yeah, you can use TTRPGs to improve your life in a lot of different ways.
Absolutely,
and they promote togetherness and, you know, cooperation and friendship.
Oh, that was the sweetest little...
Yeah, I've never seen Jeremy look so cutesy in my life.
Oh my God, my heart just melted.
Yeah. I almost forgave you for that horror show that you've put us through in this last season.
Fucking hell,
recording.
No, unacceptable. Thanks, you brought it right back. It's gone now. My heart is cold.
Yeah, I'm dead. It's dead for you, Jeremy. I can't wait for people to listen to this. If they get through the first four episodes, I will be...
Like, honestly, you know. Content warning, please. Like, wow, we're going to have to add a couple. No,
we are going to put a content warning.
We are going to put
a content warning, but it's not.
It's bad in a very good way, everyone.
Yeah. It's good. It's very good. Don't worry. It's just to protect people. Yeah. Just to make sure everyone's safe.
Yeah, it's not trust. It's not like you're not going to be sitting here. It's not like the ending of Audition or something.
No,
you're not going to be watching a Serbian film.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, like, we all sat through it. Do you know what I mean?
We all came back.
We sat through it. We came back.
Yeah, we came back.
Uh,
Beautiful. Well, a lovely note to end on, and we will go ahead and wrap up this episode here. If you enjoy this and you like what we do and you want some more of it, please feel free to check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/TB Halflings. You can also find us on all social medias at TB Halflings. And please, 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 whilst you're listening to this, why not drop us a review? It really helps us find new halflings and expand and carry on doing what we're doing. So drop us a little 5-star review and it would be mean the world to us, so thank you very much for that and for continuing.
Every review gets a recipe.
Yeah, well, that is a bad.
Fuck, that's too much. I know.
We already
still
have hundreds of reviews. You know, so you cannot promise this.
No. From now on, not
I mean,
those.
There
ones.
Will be hot. Okay. Well, I mean, it's look. It's
Nazi. Don't. I'm gonna go ahead and step in and say no.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're
cool.
gonna say
I'm
no.
Saying
we're
no
gonna
on
say
your
no.
Behalf.
Maybe like every
okay,
100
cool.
reviews, we'll do
yeah,
a recipe.
Every 100 reviews.
Nazi release another recipe.
Another recipe.
Thank you for protecting my mental health and stopping the ADHD in me from being like, ah!
We're having to protect you from yourself right
from
now.
Yourself.
This is an
thank you very much. Thank you.
So there we go.
Three
every
black
100...
therapists.
Yeah. two black therapists.
Two black therapists
and one unhinged.
One black patient.
And on that note, every 100 reviews, we'll get a recipe from Yonati. We love you all very much. And we will see you next week. So long, shy of
so
folk.
Long, shy folk.
So long, shy folk.
Hello, halflings. It's your boy, Jeremy, coming at you with some patrons to thank. Some very, very kind people who have signed up for our Patreon. And I'm about to thank you all. I'm about to thank the heck out of you. Starting with you, Katie Hammond. Thank you. And next, you, Mason Lausenheiser, thank you. And then T. Alexander, oh, thanks, T. And Dana Launius, how could I forget? Dana, thank you, Dana Launius. And Evangeline, thank you, Evangeline. Oh, Logan Hamilton, of course. Thank you, Logan. Thank you. And then, oh, Witzian. Oh, thank you, Witzian. You, thank you. Oh, and Carly Ann. Thank you, Carly Ann. We got Jamie Long. Oh, thank you, Jamie Long. Ben Davis. Thank you, Ben Davis. And then June. Thank you, June. And Alex Zachernuk. I'm sorry, Alex. I'm doing my best. Those are all the variations that I could think of to how to pronounce your surname. But thank you. I hope I got it right at least once. That was in your honor. Thank you, Alex. Thank you also to Hannah Bowen, if you're really out there with the pronunciation. And then Bones Boy. Thank you, Bones Boy. Oh, Finn, just Finn. Thank you, Finn. And Ann Wells. Oh, thank you, Ann Wells. And Brynna McFarland. Thank you, Brynna McFarland. And Jeff Merrill. I see you, Jeff Merrill. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff Merrill. And Carson Moore. Thank you, Carson Moore. And Sonia Maitland. Thank you, Sonia Maitland. Oh, Maddie H. Thank you so much, Maddie H. And Joseph Wood. Thank you. Thank you, Joseph Wood. You specifically. When I say Joseph Wood, I mean you, Joseph Wood. Thank you. And then Katie M. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Katie M. And then one individual who asked to remain nameless, you know exactly who you are. Yeah, I guess that's it. Thank you. Thank you all so much. Thank you deeply. It's great. Oh, if there wasn't a global pandemic on and all of you were not only consenting, but like enthusiastically consenting, I would give each and every one of you a hug. It wouldn't be like a weird hug. It would just be like a normal short duration hug. Just like a, you know, thank you. Just a heartfelt thank you hug. Or a handshake, if you wanted a handshake. Pat on the back, thumbs up. I could sing you a short ditty. I'm happy to do that. I could sing multiple, I could sing a ditty to multiple of you at a time, like several of you at a time. I think that could get us through it a little quicker. Anyway, I'm done thanking people. Yeah, I don't know, shout out to the two crew.
Well, thank you so much for that offer, Jeremy Cobb, of hugs, I guess. I would like to thank some more patrons, if that's okay with you. I would offer a hug as well. I'll also offer like a firm handshake if anyone would prefer that. Again, you know, pandemic is still going, so we'll refrain for now, but eventually I'll offer a warm hug, handshake, high five. Always down for a high five. But I wanted to thank some more of our patrons. We've had so many patrons. Thank you so much for all your patronage, patrons. Robbie Leeson, Carrie Fisk, Matthew McGowan, Zachary Rivers, Avery Woolard, JJ Boyles, Stacey Marie Ishmael, Brendan Hooker, Jesse Kovacs, Maria B, Jericho Savage, Campbell McCauley, Brian G, Thomas Roher, Eddie Maisonette, May Samuel, Sam McClaley Ward, Maca Mariah, Targot, Robert Mellon, Loracle the Oracle, and Thomas Monty. Thank you so much for being patrons. I can't tell you how much it means. It allows us to do so much cool stuff. This really is our bread and butter. This is where we make any kind of money on the show. And we really, really appreciate you choosing to spend your money on our little show. And I hope that you are getting some just rewards from it. If you are not a patron and would like to be, then please feel free to sign up at patreon.com/TB Halflings. There is a ton of goodies on there already, so plenty of stuff. If you have finished the show and you still want to binge some 3BH, there is plenty of stuff on there. Go and check it out. Thank you, everyone. Have a fantastic week.